This is Maryland Morning on 88.1. I'm Sheila Cast. Welcome back to The Lines Between Us, a weekly series about inequality in the Baltimore region. A study 10 years ago showed that nearly a third of those released from prison back into Baltimore City returned to just six poor and mostly African-American neighborhoods. Over the next few weeks, we'll explore the cycle that has run for generations between Maryland's prisons and Baltimore's poorest neighborhoods. Today, we want to talk about prison itself and return to a controversial topic we discussed late last year, solitary confinement of prisoners. The issue has even cropped up in the story that has been dominating local headlines this week, the alleged criminal conspiracy involving both inmates and correctional officers at the Baltimore City Detention Center. The indictment alleged that members of the conspiracy took orders from inmate Tavon White, accused member of the Black Gorilla family. When he pleaded not guilty on Monday, White's lawyer complained he's being held in solitary confinement. Department of Public Safety and Correctional Services spokesman Rick Benetti told the Baltimore Sun that White is being held in administrative segregation. Benetti said Maryland prisons don't use solitary. Critics say the effect of solitary confinement on prisoners amounts to cruel and unusual punishment or even torture. Last October, the New York Civil Liberties Union released results of a year-long investigation based on interviews with and letters from more than 100 prisoners who have been in what's called the box or the hole. NYCLU concluded that solitary confinement is arbitrarily applied and that it not only harms prisoners, but makes prisons less safe for inmates and for guards. Last August, we spoke with Kendall Gifford, assistant warden at the Maryland Correctional Institute for Women in Jessup.
Solitary confinement does not exist in the state prison system in Maryland, neither in policy nor practice.
The state does use what it calls administrative segregation and disciplinary segregation to take certain prisoners out of the general population.
All inmates in the DOC are subject to double cell housing. There are some inmates that are specified for single cell, but that's usually for mental health reasons or in cases where inmates just simply their behavior has demonstrated that they would pose a risk to anyone else that was in the cell with them.
In other words, Gifford said most segregated prisoners in Maryland have a cellmate. Critics complain there's not enough data to know what's really happening in Maryland prisons. A Baltimore Sun editorial estimated 8% of Maryland prisoners are in segregation at any given time. Today, we'll hear the perspectives of two ex-offenders who have spent time segregated from the general populations in prisons in Maryland. Greg Carpenter has been on our show several times. He works for the Jericho Reentry Program in Baltimore. Welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Sheila.
Darrell Berry spent time in several state institutions over nearly 15 years. He's been out for 3 years. Welcome, Darrell.
Well, thank you.
And also with us is Dave DeBora. He wrote to us after he heard our previous interviews about solitary confinement. He had a short bit in solitary at the minimum to medium federal correctional facility in Cumberland. Welcome to the show.
It's a pleasure.
David, how did you end up in solitary and how long were you there?
I was in solitary confinement for almost 28 hours after having to self-surrender to the federal correction facility on a holiday.
Oh, so, what was the charge that you were surrendered?
One count of bank fraud.
Okay, so it was a federal holiday and?
And the staff was a skeleton staff that day. The default is put them in solitary confinement, we'll deal with it later. And there I ended up.
What was it like that night?
To say the least, the most miserable place I've ever been in my life.
Why?
It was noisy. There were people screaming. And I think it was the apprehension of not knowing what I had done to be here. Was anyone going to know I was even here?
Were you completely by yourself?
Yes.
Could you communicate with anyone?
No.
And so how did it end?
28 hours later, someone came to get me and said, we're ready to process you.
Darrell, how much time would you estimate you've spent in segregated units in Maryland prisons?
A few years, approximately about 3 years altogether at different times over the 14 years I spent in prison.
How often did you have a cellmate and how often were you alone?
Well, it depends on what you went in segregation for. My first time going to segregation was a riot.
And this was where?
Baltimore City Detention Center.
Okay.
And it was just a riot. A lot of guys got stabbed, and I just was one of the guys that got stabbed. However, I refused medical treatment, so they put me in segregation.
So am I understanding you to say you didn't actually cause this fracas, but you ended up
in it,
in segregation afterwards?
In order to contain the crowd, whoever they assume is involved in one of these altercations, they grab and they put in segregation. Now, you have different types of segregation. You have holding cells, which is segregation where a lot of guys is put into, like, one cage area. Then you have single cells where one guy's just put in there and isolated, maybe stripped of his clothes and put in there naked.
Have you been isolated?
I've been isolated several times.
What effect does it have psychologically?
Psychologically, to me, it makes me bitter. The silence, the noise, the things that's happening on segregation, the feces throwing, you know, the screams from other men. You just forced to face everything that you've ever experienced in your life. You're forced to confront your thoughts. There's no anesthesia there. There's no entertainment there. You're just there with your thoughts, your insecurities, and your demons. Some people can't handle it. So that's why suicide on segregation. I've seen men kill themselves.
This is Maryland Morning on WIP. I'm Sheila Cast, speaking about solitary confinement with three men who have experienced it. That was Darrell Berry. Also, we've talked to David Deborah and Greg Carpenter. I want to ask you, you've worked with many people reentering society after prison, the ones who've done a lot of time in segregated units. Do you see an effect on them?
I think depends on the person and their temperament, because, you know, men will consume themselves with reading just so that they can maintain some level of sanity. But for those who dare not attempt to read, then they're the ones who are worse off.
You've spent time in solitary.
Yes, I have.
What was the charge that put you in prison?
Armed robbery.
And how much time would you say you spent in solitary?
Oh, I spent approximately 20 years in prison. And out of that time, I perhaps spent close to 3 years in solitary confinement on and off.
How long at a stretch? I mean, what was the longest?
Well, the longest I think I've spent in solitary confinement at one time is like 4 months.
Wow. What effect did that have on you?
Well, it causes you to really face those things, you know, that you've been running from. So you kind of have to just resolve to the fact that you have to survive. And basically that's what it becomes, a mission for survival.
Darrell, what was the charge that landed you in prison?
I have no problem sharing it, but I'm often reluctant to tell people because people are judgmental, because a lot of people can't relate to my environment and my upbringing, but I was arrested and convicted for murder.
Okay, and let me pick up on what you said about judgmental. I imagine some of our listeners are saying, well, okay, someone convicted of murder probably should be segregated from the rest of the prisoners. I mean, even the New York Civil Liberties Union, in a very critical report, acknowledges that solitary is sometimes necessary. Do you think there's ever an appropriate time for solitary confinement?
I believe that there's always a need for measures or some type of discipline. However, segregation does not help. You set me there. I stay there for 23 hours a day. How is that reforming me? Now, as Greg said, you do have an opportunity to receive some type of books and self-teach yourself, read, but that varies. That varies from prisons. That varies from shifts. That varies from the officers that you're dealing with. If you have an officer that wants to be a total, what we call jerk, well, I will use something that would be more belligerent.
But I get it.
That wants to be a total jerk, he will give you nothing but the clothes on your back, and sometimes not even that. So solitary confinement is not a place that can help a person that society wants to be reformed or changed.
David, let me ask you to weigh in. Do you ever see that there's a time that solitary confinement could create a good effect?
Yes, but I think it should be used sparingly. In my mind, it's a form of emotional torture, because where I was, I had the buzz of the fluorescent lights and the screaming at all hours of the day and night. It's just a living hell. Management used it as a default mechanism.
Explain
they said,
that.
Well, if there's a fight, if there's somebody spit on somebody, if somebody stole something from the food hall, which is the default mechanism is everybody goes to segregated housing or the hole.
The point is management, not justice.
Exactly. That the staff at these places, at these facilities, may say, ours is not the place to figure out who was right and who was wrong. We just need to maintain some semblance of order where people aren't fighting or whatever. But that there's a human toll there.
But how does one maintain order in prison if there's not something really scary to threaten prisoners with?
I don't think it's a suitable option. I really don't. I have a real problem with it. And I think the impact it has on people afterwards is what needs to be, we need to focus on. Putting people in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day for 4 months at a time or 6 months at a time is emotionally torturous. And then to just say, okay, we're opening the door, leave, ain't helping.
I would like to answer your question. In my opinion, I know for a fact that there's a root to all problems. So this problem had to derive from something.
You're talking about a clash.
Right. So what segregation saying, as he said, is to warehouse, is to contain. But the problem is not resolved. They need to look for ways and measures to resolve these issues. You know, from a more cultural standpoint, maybe find someone that's influential enough that can communicate with the guys that's in prison that can actually mediate these situations. A lot of these problems can be resolved if different measures are took.
Maryland officials say that prisoners put in disciplinary or administrative segregation in Maryland are assessed like daily. Is that your experience?
No. And they have never assessed me. I've never seen a psychologist. They have never come to check on me. You're fed and warehoused. You're let out for 1 hour to what we call triple S, defecate, shower, and shave. They don't assess you. My first time with segregation, I was 18 years old. And it was an altercation between a group of individuals. And they tried to contain us, and they put us on segregation without a proper hearing or anything. So at 18 years old, a person that was involved in a fight, first time in prison, uneducated, how is this solitary helping me? I sat in that cell, and I thought of ways and things that I can do when I get off.
You were not reforming yourself, you're saying. The kinds of things you were thinking about were not examining your conscience and deciding how to reform your life.
How was it? At what point did I want to change? Now, I'm just coming into prison from leaving an environment and charged with probably one of the worst, heinous crimes. Why would I want to reform? I still have this demon inside of me that and these insecurities inside of me that makes me want to appease to a different crowd or appease to my peers and be looked upon as, you know, somebody.
Was there any kind of schedule at which you got to make your case to someone in authority to take you out of solitary?
Absolutely not. It was so much chaos that after a period of time, they forgot what I was on lockup for.
So how did that stay in administrative segregation end for you? What happened?
They opened my door.
Just like out of the
opened my door, put a cart in front of my door, and told me, come on.
Do you have any idea why?
They really didn't know why I was there. So at some point, they had to let me off. So they let me off like, okay, we're going to population. You just can't go back to the area where you were, where the altercation happened at.
And that's what you were describing at the federal facility.
Yeah, and you know, you almost want to say there's this inertia. It's like, you know, you sit there and you say, does anybody even know I'm here? Does anybody know where I am, that I'm in this room?
Right.
What do? You sit there. You know, maybe you're only supposed to be there for 2 weeks, but where does it say that? You just don't know.
They do administrative reviews. I guess they're monitoring your conduct over like a monthly period. So a piece of paper is submitted that you may have not have done nothing in 30 days and is put in front of a captain or lieutenant, whoever the warden appoint to do this job. And they was like, well, okay, he's doing good, but why is he here? They probably don't even ask that question.
The corrections department tends to talk about segregation as a matter of days. You seem to have experienced it, both of you, in Maryland prisons as a matter of weeks or months.
Exactly. And I think it comes down to terminology or language or words, administrative seg, punitive seg, solitary, you know. So but it's all, at the end of the day, the same thing. If you're in a cell confined for 23 hours of a day and you are let out for 1 hour to have some restricted movement, then, you know, a rose by any other name is still a rose, you know what I mean?
Greg, I want to get back to something that I think I heard you say earlier. You seem to be saying that there can be a good self-review that comes out of solitary. Or did I misunderstand?
No, you did not misunderstand that. That is, I think, the absolute truth. Because, one, when you are in solitary confinement or when you're in a situation where you have to face yourself, you can't run from yourself. And not to make this a religious conversation, however, the connection that we as human beings have with the Creator is a real connection. And that connection is always alive. And so when we can't call on anybody else, invariably we call on the Creator. And so once we have fought and kicked and scratched and, you know, resisted as much as we can, then we surrender.
But Darrell, I got the impression from you that you didn't feel any transformation going on when you were in segregation.
Not in the beginning. I mean, I didn't feel any transformation because I was young at the time. You know, now as I got older and would find myself in these positions, then it changed. But I still don't see a positive from segregation. It has a dark cloud in it. I mean, the environment is just dark.
David, do you think anything's going to come out of the fact that wider society is paying a little more attention to this problem?
Let's hope. We have the highest incarceration rate of any civilized country in the world. We can't just keep warehousing people.
And you think that segregation is inherent in the warehousing approach?
Yes. There are instances where I think there are people that may have a mental health issue that should be isolated for their own safety so that nothing happens to them. But when the majority of these situations that I have seen and witnessed have been petty fights, petty arguments, petty theft, petty this, and people are just defaulted to this situation, and that's not helping.
Guys, thanks for talking to me about it.
Absolutely. Thank you for
having
us.
Thank you for addressing the issue.
Thank you.
Dave Dabora, Darrell Berry, and Greg Carpenter. We've got more information, including a link to the New York Civil Liberties Union investigation at linesbetweenus.org. On 88.1, I'm Sheila Cast. This is Maryland Morning. That's it for The Lines Between Us this week. Ahead on the show, our monthly survey of the silver screen. Stay tuned.
Thanks for listening to this episode of The Lines Between Us, WYPR's year-long exploration of inequality in the Baltimore region. This is Maryland Morning senior producer Lawrence Lanahan. Now, join the conversation at facebook.com/thelinesbetweenus. Or tell us your story at linesbetweenus.org. The Lines Between Us is made possible by grants from Associated Black Charities, Cohen Opportunity Fund, Ethics and Excellence in Journalism Foundation, Baltimore Community Foundation, and Open Society Institute Baltimore, as well as support from members of the WYPR Board of Directors. I hope you'll join us again on Friday at 9 a.m. on 88.1 FM in the Baltimore region, and everywhere else, streaming live at WYPR.org. Have a great day.